back on the tape. So it doesn't sound like you felt ostracized or anything.
No, I felt I felt different in that my interests were clearly different than most other students. Mm-hmm. But I knew that there was a certain number of us who had similar kinds of interests. And there were it wasn't like there was only one or two of us.
Right.
There were probably, somewhere probably, on my guess, is somewhere between 30 and 50 people that had very similar kinds of goals and very similar kinds of interests that I had. And those clearly were my classmates I had in certain advanced placement courses. The few percentage or few number of individuals that also would go over to the college campus and take classes. And maybe that was an advantage also because, you know, I saw these people at the college, for example, that were much older. Okay, and realized basically, this is only the beginning. This is not anything close to the end. I still have a long ways to go. In which case, you know, whether I went 3 or 4 years in high school or whether I did these other extracurricular activities didn't impact on me as much.
Okay. I noticed you were valedictorian of your class. Was that, you were valedictorian of the class ahead of you, actually, because you really graduated early.
No, they did it for whatever class that was. It was for the class during which I graduated in.
Okay.
Okay, so I think they amassed whatever all the GPAs were in total. And pick the people for that. There actually were co-valedictorians. There were two valedictorians.
Okay. And did you have to give a speech?
Yeah, we had to give a speech. And this was interesting because, you know, I had debated for a year. And my debate coach, Mrs. Reedy, says, you better give a good speech. So we worked on it. She helped me a lot in terms of, you know, trying to put into concrete wording as to what are the real messages that I wanted to talk about. And I vaguely remember what we talked about. I mean, we vaguely talked about the concept of this is only a first step in amongst all of us, whether we were going to go out in the real world or whether we were going to go on to other educational opportunities. So that was a theme, at least, of what we talked about.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that you started school in Hong Kong at a Catholic school.
Yes.
Did you? But you went to public school here.
I went to public school here, yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Was there a role for religion in your upbringing?
No, I think there clearly is. Mm-hmm. The reason, I mean, both my parents are Catholic. I'm Catholic, and my family's Catholic. But the reason why I went to Catholic school wasn't really a religious-driven decision. There was a huge dichotomy in terms of the quality of education between public schools and private schools in Hong Kong. And hence the Sacred Heart schools offered certain opportunities that otherwise would not be available in the public schools. I actually remember vaguely, I don't remember this to any great detail, I remember we had to take an entrance examination to get into kindergarten. and I don't remember exactly what it was. I just remember sitting outside, my parents would go in, and then they would have me go in. Now I don't exactly remember what happened, but I remember just sitting there waiting for me to go in and take whatever the examination was. So I think the quality of the education also had a huge say into the decision.
Was your family, I mean, were you active in the church? I mean, did you go to church every week?
No, we went to church every week. We still do. We don't we didn't participate necessarily, you know, in a lot of the other activities that, for example, our church has now, in part because of the hours. So it was something that was always in my upbringing. Although probably not to the same degree of activism as many other members have.
Okay. Well, one of the things that, you know, is interesting to me is how people in science balance the issue of God and science. So how do you see the two?
How do I balance the two in terms of what I do?
Well, can God and science coexist?
No, I think God and science can coexist. It depends as to whether one takes the Bible literally or whether one takes it as a reflection of something that somebody recorded. Okay. So whether the Earth or the entire universe was actually created in 7 days as we know it now, you know, it doesn't bother me whether it was 7 times 24 hours or 7 times 24 million years. One can't really, I think, in any area be able to say this is the scientific proof that God exists. Or anything like that. But actually, even in science, we really never prove anything. I mean, we have hypotheses, and we have data that support this type of hypotheses. And we think that's truth, but truth is always relative. Okay? So we have things that support it, but I don't think necessarily we have to that we don't ever prove it. So I think, in a way, you know, the religion and science can coexist. Obviously, ultimately, what one believes in terms of religion ultimately comes to an act of faith. Okay, so obviously, you can't do experiments to be able to demonstrate the existence of God one way or the other. So I think, from that standpoint, it's an act of faith. In terms of how one applies it to science, for me, there's nothing that necessarily, from my religious upbringing, that I say this allows me to do this or doesn't allow me to do this in terms of science or medicine. Okay, I think we're given certain types of talents. We're given certain types of technological possibilities. And we can use those one way or another in terms of either advancing what we presently know about science and hopefully improving, you know, life in general. But I don't necessarily see a huge discrepancy between those two types of circles.
Okay. Well, one of the other things that we like to talk about is how people got interested in science. And it sounds like you were really started that very young.
Well, I think this is, again, one of those things where certain people have certain impact upon your life. Neither of my parents are scientists. I mean, both of them are math/science driven or related in that my parents, by and large, were engineers or are engineers. So during high school, you know, I knew I was interested in math and science. I think, again, because I excelled in that more than other subjects. And at that point, I think also is that things aren't so differentiated. I remember, at that time, you're differentiating yourself, but you really are not. I mean, science in the high school sense is so broad, right? It could be you're interested retrospectively, you know, now that could have translated into being an astronaut in becoming a computer scientist, mm-hmm. A physician, an archaeologist, mm-hmm. Many things that we would say, post-training would be so different. Mm-hmm. So science and math were clearly very, very related to mm-hmm. each other. So it was more of math and science and social sciences versus versus arts, for example. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where most people come in into college as pseudo-differentiated.
Okay.
And that you're interested in either math or science. Mm-hmm. And in that category, you go to college, you would either be interested less so in math, but really, biological sciences, physical sciences, mm-hmm. Versus the social studies, political science, psychology, mm-hmm. Philosophy, literature, mm-hmm. things like that. Mm-hmm. So I knew I was interested in that. And then during high school, one of my most favorite teachers, James Shannon, was my chemistry teacher. Mm-hmm. And he actually was one that prompted me to take an independent sort of study course with him, mm-hmm. try to do different kinds of science projects. Mm-hmm. So that's where, for example, my interest in chemistry over biology or mm-hmm. Physics mm-hmm. really became more apparent. Mm-hmm. And then during college, because I was interested in chemistry already, I was interested in how things worked. Okay, and at those days, now we're talking about the late 70s, chemistry was really one of the physical sciences. You could actually study mechanism. Whereas biology at that time wasn't as well differentiated in terms of the things you could do to manipulate the system. When people talked about biology, it was more observational science. Mm-hmm. It was comparative anatomy. Mm-hmm. You couldn't exactly manipulate systems like what we do today. Mm-hmm. So because of that, I was much more enamored with chemistry and biochemistry than I was with biology. Mm-hmm. So in college, I became a chemistry major. Mm-hmm. And again, I was... my interest in research was actually also sparked by one of the professors who I had, Joe Lambert, who...
this was in college.
This is in college, mm-hmm. who allowed me to actually dabble in the laboratory mm-hmm. Beginning my sophomore year, mm-hmm. which actually, I have to confess, I didn't get a whole lot done during that time. But I learned a lot mm-hmm. In terms of how one approaches science. Mm-hmm. Because even at that point, before my experience in Joe's laboratory, it was very, very clinically inclined. I was basically going to become a physician.
Okay. So, go ahead. I don't want to interrupt your train of thought.
Yeah. It was, at that point, I was interested in medical sciences. Mm-hmm. But my experience, again, in Joe's laboratory was that he was interested in understanding what the mechanism was in terms of a particular type of chemical reaction. Okay, mm-hmm. So after two and some years in his laboratory, the questions of, why do certain biological processes occur mm-hmm. those kinds of questions became more interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And that then ultimately led to my application then to medical school, not only just as in the medical school, but also as a combined program between the MD and the PhD degree. In those days, again, we're talking about now the late 70s, early 80s, those programs were not huge, mm-hmm. were not large. Mm-hmm. They were not well publicized at the time. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, again, by occurrence of a number of circumstances, I ended up applying to the MD PhD program at Washington University.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's back up just a step here, mm-hmm. because I want to explore how you got. You graduated a year early, so you were probably 16 or something when you graduated.
I had I hadn't quite turned 16 yet. So actually I entered...
Oh, my goodness.
I entered... Is that right?
Most kids graduate at 17 or 18.
Right. So actually I had turned 16.
Okay.
So I was 16 when I entered college.
Okay.
At Northwestern.
So this is really young. You know,
right.
It's pretty young. And Northwestern is not in Orange County. It's in Chicago.
Right.
So how did you come to go so far away, mm-hmm. and then after that, we'll talk about how that was.
Mm-hmm. So I think there were a number of factors. Again, mm-hmm. this is what I'm saying, the environment dictates where you go. Mm-hmm. First was that I was interested in chemistry mm-hmm. at that time. And the number of choices that I had were, for example, UC schools mm-hmm. Or some of the smaller schools, one of which is Northwestern. So one of the major deciding factors really was UCLA's freshman chemistry classes, 2,000 to 3,000.
I took it okay. once, so I know.
Whereas Northwestern's freshman chemistry class is a few hundred.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I had already taken, I already been through the UC experience when I went to UC
sure.
Irvine, and that's
sure.
a much smaller school.
Sure.
And their freshman chemistry was already 700, 800
mm-hmm.
students.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, you felt you were just one of the masses. So that was one of the major decisions of why I ended up at Northwestern.
Okay.
The second major one is that there were two high school teachers in my high school
mm-hmm.
that were very active in the Northwestern Alumni Association.
Oh.
So what happens, obviously, is that whoever is the most active at the high school level at those times, you know, mm-hmm. become out of proportionally large.
Okay.
Okay. In terms of, you know, high school kids' world.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those were two major factors. And the third factor, I think, is that I had always grown up, you know, fairly close to my family. So going to Chicago was going to be totally different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of me also wanted to test to see whether I could make it on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So I think all three things factored into the final
mm-hmm.
equation and outcome of the equation, which mm-hmm. was that I ended up in Northwestern.
Yeah. Now, you had already taken freshman chemistry, though.
Right.
Right. So,
right.
yeah.
But still, it was the size of the class. You know, organic okay. chemistry is a similar thing, just
right.
one scale
right.
less.
Right. Okay. So at 16, you packed your bags and went.
Yeah, the funny story is that I had never actually been in snow for more than 24 hours
uh-huh.
before I went to Northwestern. And I remember my parents and I getting ready to ship me off to Northwestern. So we knew it was cold. So we had to buy a parka, right? In August. In Southern California.
Yeah.
So we had to go to end up going to Sears, and yes, you can order it by mail.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we get this thing, this huge, gigantic parka, with this hood that folds out, and I never understood why on earth you would need a hood that folds out about, you know, a foot in front of your face, until my first winter in Northwestern.
Yeah.
So, I got there. It was, I mean, I think undoubtedly I grew up a lot faster than I would have if I had stayed, you know, at UCLA or if I was within driving distance, you know, or an hour's distance from home at UC Berkeley or something like that. It was actually, again, I think there are a lot of universities that would have worked out well for me, but it was a good compromise because the school was relatively small. At that time, it had only 6,000 to 7,000 undergraduates.
Oh, really? Wow.
My organic chemistry class only had 100 kids in it. And it was fairly... It's a very conservative town. You know, Evanston still, I think, to this day is dry.
Oh, really?
The ACTU headquarters is there. Okay, so it was also a very conservative school. Despite, you know, it being just neighboring Chicago, because it's not actually in Chicago, it's in Evanston.
Mm-hmm.
The undergraduate campus is in Evanston.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't, the transition wasn't all that harsh, except for the weather. You went to class. You know, I lived on campus for the duration of the 4 years, with the exception for the summers.
In the dorms.
Mm-hmm. Here, it was actually clearly even a more homogeneous population, mm-hmm, in terms of what people wanted to do as compared to high school. Mm-hmm. It's clearly people here wanted to excel in X, Y, or Z. Mm-hmm. Whether that meant going to medical school, going to graduate, mm-hmm, school, going to law school. Everybody, from that standpoint, was a little bit more homogeneous, mm-hmm, than in high school.
Mm-hmm. Now, Northwestern is a state school.
No, it's a private school.
Oh, it is private?
Private school.
Why did I think it was?
It's the only private school at that time in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe that's why I thought so. Okay, so did your parents finance this?
My parents financed it. One of the good things about Northwestern was that they had significant amount of financial, they granted a significant amount of financial aid. Mm-hmm. So that actually, in terms of, relatively speaking, in terms of dollars per year, for I think it was pretty much comparable whether I went to UCLA or Northwestern.
Mm. Now, financial aid nowadays means loans, which you then have to pay back.
Right, but not in those days. Those days it was actually scholarships. Mm-hmm. I did take out loans, but it, you know, I think I amassed a total of something like $4,000 in loans. For the whole 4 years,
yeah,
which in those days were astronomical.
Yeah.
Right? Sure. Nowadays you would say, oh, that's a year.
Yeah.
But I think financial aid was very, very different, mm-hmm, than it is now. Okay. And there were federal monies, there were private monies, mm-hmm, there were institutional, mm-hmm, scholarships, institutional, mm-hmm, funds.
Now, did you end up spending 4 years there? Because you went in with an awful lot of college credit already.
Right. So by the time I entered, I had sophomore standings. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what I did was, I felt that, you know, if I took all 4 years there, I would have been 20 years old when I applied to medical school, which I thought, because by the junior year, I had enough credits to graduate. So that would have even been...
To graduate?
To graduate. Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I already had... I started with sophomore standings. So after 3 years, I had
me.
3 years, I had sufficient credits to graduate. But then I would have been 19 applying to medical school.
Right.
So I didn't think that I was ready for that. So what I ended up doing, because I was already interested in research, was that Northwestern had this very nice program, a 4-year bachelor's combined master's degree, mm-hmm, where you could actually do additional research as part of a thesis for the master's degree. Mm-hmm. I had actually entertained a number of different types of options at that point. You know, one of the things I really liked during the first 3 years, actually I had the opportunity to take a number of senior level economics courses, mm-hmm, history courses, which to me were actually quite fascinating. Mm-hmm. So these were great courses because they were not graduate level, but more junior and senior level, mm-hmm, courses that had 25, 30 students. Mm-hmm. And I would obviously be the only science major that's, mm-hmm, there. But the interesting thing was really that I thought very differently in terms of the way I would attack problems, mm-hmm, as the other 20-some students. And it was interesting for me to listen to the other 20-some students, mm-hmm, think, because that's an interesting way of thinking about it. I never, uh-huh, thought about it from that way.
Right.
And then when they would ask me, I was like, well, this is the way I would think about it. And they would look at me like, what planet are you from? But it was an interesting, yeah, you know, they would say, hey, but that's a different way of looking at,
yeah,
the problem.
Yeah, sure.
So it got to be a very interesting way. A lot of good discussions, mm-hmm, came from it. Mm-hmm. In terms of, you know, whether how you would resolve a certain social political situation, how one would interpret what was the right thing or wrong thing to do in history, mm-hmm, So actually, from that experience, I thought a little bit about pursuing, you know, a second bachelor's degree during the last year that I was there.
Oh, uh-huh. You mean in something non-science?
Right.
Okay.
Right. But I ended up, for a variety of reasons, just pursuing, you know, mm-hmm. the chemistry mm-hmm. aspect of it and still taking a couple of mm-hmm. upper-level social science mm-hmm. courses.
Now, you went into this as a pre-med. When
right.
when did you sort of come to the idea that you wanted to be a doctor?
I don't know. I think it was probably something that my parents had also contributed to. Mm. You know,
little
eons
subliminal
back, right?
messages.
Well, I'm not sure it's subliminal. Because I remember, you know, there are these things that your parents always keep, your report cards, you know, mm-hmm. and the back you said, what I wanted to be, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first couple of years, it was, I wanted to be a shortstop.
Oh.
I wanted to be a shortstop. I wanted to be a shortstop. And then I think somewhere in the later grade school, it was, I wanted to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. But again, I think that is the kind of people that one meets. So one of the worst things I had happen to me was that I had very, very bad allergies.
Oh.
Phenomenally bad allergies in high school.
Mm-hmm.
In part brought on by running track. Mm. Okay, in part because it was Orange County and everything blooms there. To the point where, you know, I could not sleep some nights mm-hmm. because I could not breathe.
Mm-hmm.
So went to see the allergist, and miraculously 3 months down the road after some allergy shots, I got better. So, you know, there's certain things that impress upon a kid.
Yeah.
Hey, this guy can make me better.
Uh-huh.
That probably even strengthened mm-hmm. my desire at that point to be able to become a physician.
Mm-hmm.
And that pretty much was what I thought about, really, as an undergraduate.
Mm-hmm.
Until I got more interested in, or had a little bit greater exposure mm-hmm. to, in terms of research.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting that you ended up in immunology. I
mean, exactly. Well, is that related to? That's also related. That's not just related to my history. So when I was in medical school, my mom actually developed lupus.
Oh.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, she was able to get over it. And at that time, I did my PhD work with John Atkinson, mm-hmm. who's a rheumatologist. Okay. So I think, again, there are certain people that, you know, you've been exposed to, that
right.
you've had good experiences
right.
with
right.
that are extremely formative in one's life. You know, if I could have done my research with, let's say, a cardiologist,
mm-hmm.
and maybe a cardiologist mm-hmm. today,
sure.
rather than a rheumatologist or an immunologist.
Sure.
So from that standpoint, it's just very, very, the things that affect you every day
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
clearly dictate what you ultimately become.
Sure. Okay. So you got what did you do in Joe Lambert's lab?
Okay. So Joe's lab, one of the major things he was interested in was you may vaguely remember in organic chemistry how we had to always memorize which nucleophile, which electrons attack which thing. And one of the things he was interested in was the mechanisms by which certain compounds mm-hmm. Underwent certain reactions. And the one that I was working on, there are these tricyclic compounds that would become halogenated. So one of the reactions we were interested in is bromination. So the idea was that somehow the bromine was going to attack and be attached to the group. And we were interested in understanding exactly how did that occur
mm-hmm.
and in what conformations mm-hmm. would that occur in. And to do that, the method that we used at that time was called nuclear magnetic resonance, NMR. Now you have all these other fancy names for it, like MRI and things like that. So we utilized this particular technology to be able to understand exactly what the intermediates are. We would trap certain intermediates and see where the bromine was, where the hydrogen was, and what were the relationships between the hydrogens versus all the other atoms within, or the other hydrogens that are within this particular compound. So that's what my thesis was centered upon, to try to figure out exactly the mechanism by which that reaction occurred. And that aside, you know, the major thing I think it taught me were a number of different things. First, that science is hard. But second, it also taught me that to look into problems from a mechanistic basis. And thirdly, again, because he was such a wonderful role model, was that you can actually enjoy doing science. And I think that really was one of the major experiences I had during my college career, to really develop the love for science. I mean, science before that was basically you go to class, you do some labs that are already preordained as to what the result was. The only question is whether you got a 95% yield versus a 90% yield, or your reaction didn't work, versus, you know, this experience where we don't know what the answer is. This is the question. And we want to try to design experiments to try to figure it out. It was really the introduction to, you know, the scientific method versus the lab, the rote lab classes. And I think that's predominantly what I got out of that experience that was so valuable for me, was just an introduction to that method.
Did you ever entertain the thought of skipping medical school and going straight to science?
To graduate school. No, I don't think so. I was always interested in medicine, okay, in terms of how the body works. And again, in the early 80s, actually not even, this is the late 70s, there wasn't that much medical research that would break to the newspapers every day. I mean, nowadays, you know, there actually is a science section. But the public perception of science actually wasn't something that you discussed every day. It was not that kind of general public discussion. So the general public perception, basically, of science was pretty much physicians, right? And hence, I think that was the skewing, basically, that prompted me to go into medical sciences. I mean, medical sciences has changed a lot, obviously, in the last 20 years. I mean, I'm sure it'll change a lot in the next 20 years. But in terms of our exposure, that was predominantly what my exposure was. I mean, my exposure actually was very, very minimal. In that, you know, nobody in my family in immediate family was a physician. Nobody in my immediate family was a scientist, a research scientist. As an undergraduate, we were on the main campus. We were not in the medical school campus. So there was little to no exposure as to what a physician does, aside from when we got sick, and no exposure as to what a career as an academic scientist or academic physician was. I mean, the exposure that I had really was what an academic scientist does, like Joe Lambert, but not in terms of a physician scientist, which is a little bit of a different boat.
So I'm trying to figure out how you ended up, what was the thinking that went into going to this combined MD-PhD program?
Again, it was circumstance that led me into this, this scenario. So I had applied to all the medical MD degrees, and actually I had not known very much about MD-PhD programs. So my plan was basically to go ahead and go to medical school, and then maybe down the road to come back and reinvestigate potential opportunities in research.
But initially you were just going to become a practicing physician, or...
Right, so there are a number of ways by which one can become an academic physician. One of them is to go ahead and do your clinical training first, and then during your part of your latter part of your clinical training to go back into the laboratory, to go into a laboratory, and then go on to become an academic physician. to do a research.
But I guess what I'm not clear about was, had you already made the decision to be an academic physician?
No. See, no.
Okay.
No. That in college, I remember going through the application process. I was going to go to become a physician, and then potentially go and do some research. The concept of an academic physician really had not been fully. I was not aware, at least, of this such kinds of positions.
Okay.
I knew that there were physicians in medical centers doing research, but I really didn't have the first iota as to what on earth they did.
Okay.
Okay, or what their life was. And I'm sure, I know that actually the life of an academic physician, you know, 1980 is totally different than what my life is now.
Sure.
So what my initial intention was just apply to medical school, do my clinical training, and then come back and maybe do some lab work down the road. And then it was at this point that at WashU and among a couple other places, once you apply for the MD program, they immediately send you the information from the MD-PhD program.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So I'm looking at this application. I go, it's an interesting idea. I'll fill it out. So, again, I sent it in, and that's where actually my beginning of my awareness of the interest of the program began.
Okay.
If they hadn't sent me that application, I wouldn't, I'm sure I would not have the presence of mind to have applied to those kinds of programs.
Okay.
Because, again, those kinds of programs were not, well, were not large programs. They were very small programs at the time. WashU's, at that time, was the largest and still is the, one of the largest MD-PhD programs around the country. So again, it was circumstance that these things had to fall into place for me to be where I am right now.
Okay. And how did you end up here? Because my guess is you probably got into pretty much many places you applied.
I got into a number of California schools. Because again, I wanted to, you know, that's where my parents were. When I came here to interview, I had a fairly positive feeling about the university. I was impressed about its commitment to research, and actually, in comparison to many other physical plants around the country, the physical plant here of this medical center is has very few peers. Okay, this is now circa like 1979. So I had very positive feelings about the university. And of course there were a number of factors. You know, at that point I still did not have a good concept of what a physician scientist was, or exactly what physician scientists do, because number one, there weren't a whole lot of them. People still in the late 70s, you know, did this 60-40 or 50-50 thing, where you spent 50-60% of the time in the laboratory and 40-50% of the time doing research. And nowadays, that's not consistent with life.
Not compatible with
not,
life.
Yeah. At least not fundable life. So in those, you know, so when I weighed all the factors, this came out ahead. And one of the major things that came out ahead, obviously, was the MD-PhD program is fully funded. You came to medical school, your entire stipend was paid, and you were paid a stipend. Okay. So for the entire duration of your medical school.
And this is not an inexpensive place to go.
I mean, many other programs have that, but this program probably was the best of all of the programs in terms of commitment by the university. Many of the other programs, you have to pay for your first 2 years of medical school. They'll pay for your research years, but then you were sort of out on your own in your final years.
Now, was this the only combined program, or did you get into
another
one?
No, this is what I'm just trying to remember. I think I applied maybe to one or two other programs. Once I became aware of this program, then I went back and did additional research in the other programs. I'm trying to remember back as to what other, I don't remember exactly which other programs. I mean, even then, I think this is sort of tells you how difficult it is to predict, you know, on paper. And actually, retrospectively, I can honestly say it for myself. I probably was one of their higher-risk picks.
Oh, really?
Okay, in terms of people that really wanted to do, that were going to be physician scientists. Because, one, I had no role models as to what a physician scientist was. Mm-hmm. Two, I came from a background which the research was not biomedically related. Mm-hmm. Okay, it was a basic science chemistry laboratory. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of the other applicants and my colleagues had been doing research in the medical school, mm-hmm. Had a very good idea of what physician scientists do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think, without a doubt, I had to be one of their more high-risk picks as to whether I was going to ultimately stay in academic science.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you came here.
And within the first week, I was ready to leave.
Really?
So this is the summer of 1980.
Well, it was August, yes.
Okay. When 17 people died.
Oh, my goodness.
In St. Louis.
Because of the heat.
Because of the heat.
Yeah.
And my electrical system to my old Ford Mustang got fried by the heat. So the first week I got here, I remember calling my parents and going, I'm not sure if this is the right place for me. You know, there are people dying here, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I'd never been in St. Louis previously.
Yeah.
And my parents said, well, stick it out. You'll be fine. You'll be better. You'll be better. And they were right.
Sure.
But it was a good introduction. Because, again, I think the place is very different than other medical places. And I can say this now, having been here for so many years now, in that it's probably more collegial than many other major medical centers.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great emphasis on teaching.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great emphasis on training MDs, MD-PhDs, and the PhD students. The MD-PhDs program is clearly one of the gems of the university. It's the first one, one of the first that was introduced into the country.
Mm-hmm.
It's the largest program. It's one of the programs that has had one of the best track records in terms of training physician scientists.
Mm-hmm.
So all the faculty
mm-hmm.
are always looking out for the students mm-hmm. at this particular institution.
Mm-hmm.
So from that standpoint, actually, it was one of the best environments I just lucked out mm-hmm. into having.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody was always everybody was always concerned about what you were doing, mm-hmm. how you were, you know, if you were having any problems.
Mm-hmm.
They cared about the students.
Mm-hmm.
So from that standpoint, it was a great environment to shift into because, again, I had not, mm-hmm. I was not as savvy as some of my mm-hmm. Colleagues were in knowing exactly what it mm-hmm. was that I had to do or wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a phenomenally good infrastructure whereby they told you exactly what you had to do. You rotate through these labs, mm-hmm. you go through medical school, then you choose a lab, and you basically work.
Mm-hmm.
As a graduate student during those laboratory years.
Now, did you do the whole 4 years of med school first?
So the program is divided up so that you do the first 2 years of medical school first.
Mm-hmm.
And then you spend 3+ years in the laboratory. And then you do your one clinical year as the final year of the program, and you don't do the equivalent of the fourth year of medical school within this program.
Okay. Actually, let me change the tape, and then we'll go on.